If you don't know, you can say, I don't really know yet. If a person asks you what you need, a lot of times the most freeing thing can be for that person that asked you is simply for you to say, I don't really know in this moment.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Casey Muse. He is a music behavior cognitive specialist, which just sounds amazing. I think you should have a giant t-shirt, the largest name tag in the world, something like that. His company is Avenue Speak. He is a skilled keynote speaker and authority in mental health and music therapy. He's dedicated to providing impactful services for daycare youth, neurodivergent individuals, and people with dementia. His innovative approach combines music therapy to enhance well-being and mental health, engaging audiences with his insights and tailored programs that inspire resilience, love that, and foster positive change. Welcome to the show, Casey.
What's up, Kenny? Thanks for having me, man.
I'm excited about this. We're going to have some fun with this. I'm going to ask probably some dumb questions. You'll give some smart answers, and everybody, including myself, will learn a lot.
My gift.
But tell me. That's cool. Well, I should have the Dumb Questions podcast. That'll just be a whole separate branch. Maybe we can do that together.
Sure.
But sure. Tell me today.
If anything, we can put the dumb statements in bloopers or something.
There you go. I did have somebody tell me I should take the bloopers from the recording and just put them at the end, like on movies.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, I think the blooper reel would be longer than the actual interview.
Or you could put them as B-roll for other interviews.
I should take B-roll from this interview, use it in the next one. They're like, wait, when did Casey get here? Like, why is this person here?
Yes, you should put the B-roll of the bloopers from Patricia's interview on my interview.
That would be fantastic. And in case anybody's listening, he's talking about Patricia Glass. She has a couple of episodes. Go check those out. I don't remember what number or anything, but just do a search.
Sure.
Use the Google machine. Tell me, Casey, today, what is on your mind?
This conversation and just developing as many good seeds for the audience to take in this conversation as possible. It may be a really ridiculous answer, but I'm a really huge proponent of there is no moment and no time in life that is more important than this moment that exists right now. So if I can develop the full paralysis and engage in this conversation with you, Kenny, so that I can give as many seeds and nuggets to the audience, then I've done this moment as much due diligence as possible. Also, in having this conversation or learning in any moment whatsoever, it is the most important opportunity for you to gain tools and wisdom and knowledge for tomorrow, the next second, the next minute, the next conversation.
That's a challenge to me. I tell people, look, my body is here, but the rest of me is 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years into the future. So if you talk to me and I'm not recognizing you, it's just because the shell is here.
Yeah.
So seeing the importance of the moment, how does your work connect with that as a music behavior cognitive specialist? You serve some really unique people groups, right? Neurodivergent individuals, people with dementia, even daycare youth, where they're just like, hey, I just want to hit this drum and make as much noise as I possibly can. What does the present moment have to do with your work and your therapy and mental health?
Yeah. So I'm going to run through a couple of examples for you. For instance, if I am in the middle of a group dementia drumming exercise practice, and I have these few ladies in the back or dudes in the back, and they are just really loud and not really in the moment with every other participant in the activity, and they are somewhat distracting possibly, but not really distracting to the many other participants that are there, possibly distracting to you because they are not listening to what you wish for them to do, right? Sometimes it is the most important thing for me to humble myself and recognize that I'm there to serve the whole entire circle. And a lot of times what I will do is I will take the really sporadic thing that they are doing, whether it be verbally with their voice or physically with their hands on the drum as rhythmic and distractions go, right? Sometimes I will make them the group leader for the next 2 minutes. I will take whatever they're doing, whether it's verbally, whether it's a really random audio noise, like whoop, and we will literally add that in what we're doing. So it's really important for me to be open-minded to those things and listen to the possibilities of how I can engage. And if I'm not present and in the moment, I miss so many cues of things that I can do in ways that I could involve. And it just is terrible. For the daycare population, it's the same thing, right? And even for the private practice that I do with it, and when I say private practice, like sometimes, so the neurodivergent program works where I give family consultation as, and not so much group consultation. So I will go into a family's house, I will give the particular program, I will provide it, and it's for a 6-month program. So what I will do is for the first 3 to 4 months, I will give all the practices to whomever the child is with the neurodivergent diagnosis, right? And then the last few months is meant of me observing the parent giving the practices and me critiquing the parent. And sometimes it just looks like whatever, because the child may not just want to participate. And so it's really important for me to listen to their cues, because a lot of times I have to meet them where they're at and then level them up just a tad bit.
I've had some of those. I was like, what am I missing? Like missing cues from even my own kids.
Yeah.
I got 5 of them. I got a litter and just speeding through the house to go. I'm like, I got to go do this thing and run this errand. And they're like, Dad, I have this or that. And I'm like, okay, cool. I might acknowledge it. I don't just like, be gone, child. Yeah. But missing those small things, just nuances and picking up on those to be able to engage. How do you see this translate, thinking of the audience, the listener? Maybe they're in a place where they're a manager for the first time. Maybe they're leading a division for the first time, or they leading a company, right? Like you or I, we've gone out and we started our own thing. Yes. And have to interact and lead others. Maybe they're employees, maybe they're contractors, maybe they're collaborators. Mm-hmm. How does that present moment, the picking up on cues, bringing that in, like seeing like, oh, this isn't going according to plan. Like you had your circle, you had your program, and these people are sitting outside of it, but you found a way to pick up on it, include them and harness that. How does that translate, say, into traditional leadership in, say, an office or another business or a nonprofit?
Right. So for managerial positions, it's really important because you have to realize and recognize that the relationship between you and whomever it may be, whatever employee it may be, is really individual. It can't be replicated so much. Like you can't have the same conversations. You can't have the same tone. Your body language can't always be the same. It has to be really important for you to understand that that employee's needs are different, and for you to be able to encourage that person to do the work fully and to do the work with as much as the best due diligence that they can, they have to be, they have to feel like they're listened to and they're heard, right? So that's one of the many examples of what we're talking about, whether we're talking about nonprofit work, whether talking about LLC work, like even whether you're talking about being a parent, right? Those things are the same things, right? Like your kids are not, they don't have the same personalities. They don't have the same needs. They don't have the same learning styles, right? So like employees don't have the same learning styles. They may have kids. They may not have kids. They may have dogs. They may be going through grieving of some specific thing. They may have lost somebody that they love. So, and even that particular person, they may go through seasons of change, right? Consideration of their seasons of change are very important.
Yeah, I don't like saying devil's advocate. I think he has enough advocates.
He has plenty.
But
he has plenty for sure.
But when I hear that, I'm imagining somebody's listening to that and they're like, dude, like that sounds exhausting. Like, I've got 5 direct reports. You mean I've got to get down in and understand the particulars of these 5 people? Mm-hmm. And on top of, I've got peers at the same managerial mm-hmm. level. I've got a boss. I've got a CEO. I've got this. That's exhausting. Can't I just show up and be me? Why can't I just be authentically me and just lead everybody here and they understand this is the place I'm coming from? I need to be efficient, because what you're describing, Casey, sounds wildly efficient, and we got a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah.
How do you respond to something like that, or the energy demand to really be in the moment and see the other person and understand those particulars and tailor your communication and your leadership or managership to what season that person's in, their state of mind, their learning style, right?
Yeah.
How do you manage the energy for all of that?
So one cool trick that I do is, when I do this in various ways, is slow the tempo down of the heartbeat or the circadian rhythm of that person's current status. Heartbeat, breathing is a good tool, right? All of those things that can slow that person's natural pace to just want to speed up. Because what happens is, if a person's going through a season or if they are uncomfortable, have a tendency mm-hmm. to just rush through things or do things really quickly, and they're not paying, 2 things are happening. If they're working on a specific task, one of the things that are happening is they're not really paying attention to the details of the small task that they're doing. I say small task, and it's probably not really a small task. The second thing that's going on is they're not paying attention to their physiological needs. Maybe they're not drinking enough water. Maybe they haven't eaten the right things today. All of those things. Maybe they missed a step on their daily morning practice. Like, maybe they skipped their morning coffee.
That's the ditch I fall in.
I don't really know. But there are small details that you could pay attention to understand a person's natural rhythm and tempo that they are rushing to, but more appropriately need to consider to be at. And it is typically lower than what they are rushing to.
That makes a lot of sense, and it makes me think of some of just the mindfulness practices mm-hmm. that people have advocated for. You have apps like Headspace and Calm and things that can just, like the breathing, which starts to slow the heartbeat.
Yeah.
You can feel more present. You can let all the thoughts like just pass through, acknowledge them. Thank you. Like Marie Kondo's, thank you. Keep moving. Mm-hmm. With your work in music and drumming in particular, mm-hmm. drumming sets the rhythm, sets the pace, mm-hmm. sets the tempo for the song, be that with one with lyrics or without.
Yeah.
How does that, what you were just talking about, how does that influence by music and drumming? And how have you built this bridge between music's influence on our own mental health or just general well-being? Can you build that bridge for me and maybe for the listeners who may not have seen where music has acted as a form of therapy and regulation?
Yeah. So specifically drumming, because that is the space that I live in, there is a science called bilateral. And so what bilateral is, it's connecting the left hemisphere of your brain and the mm-hmm. right hemisphere of your brain. It's where they connect and have more essential functioning and just speak to each other well, right? fun fact, right? The right hemisphere of your brain controls the left side of your body, and then the left hemisphere of your brain controls the right side of your body. So through that, we have the lateral portion that goes down through your central nervous system. A lot of that can be influenced by breathing, and whether it be diaphragmatic breathing, whether it be circular exercises of breathing called box breathing, lion's mane breathing, all of the random patterns of breathing that you can look up, and they're all really effective to some degree for specific things, right? So where drumming comes into play is drumming is known as the only pure art form that is solely bilateral because of the tactile feel. And so specifically hand drumming, not even stick drumming, because of the tactile feel and tactile sensation of you feeling the vibrations of the drum face. And then if you say specific things, so the exercises that I guide through, I usually do what's called a say and play. And so if you say specific things, and if you're looking at specific things in color mapping, which are really particular as well, right? So if you combine all of these senses, then it adds to the connecting of the bilateral activity, right? So what bilateral does is it is the body's way of connecting to the processing the central nervous or the frontal cortex, right? So what that is body's ability to problem solve and think clearly, right? Also, what it's connected to is what's called the amygdala, and also neuroplasticity, which are pain receptors, as well as trauma response, collecting data. All of those things are what we explore. I'll give you an example, right? So because I also do the Caldwell, which is the local fine arts academy, I do their drumline instruction.
Okay.
Sometimes those kids will come in to drumline practice and they just be having a really bad day, just for whatever reason. For whatever reason, kids have bad days. Could be a number of reasons or a bunch of reasons at one time. So they're having a bad day and they're having to facilitate conversation with 11 other kids that are part of a drum line, and they don't want to hear anything at all. So what happens is I will sometimes guide them through a slow pattern breathing exercise to get their heart and their nervous system regulated so that we can process a little bit of emotions as to what's going on. So through that, they're better to understand what's going on and what they can do to influence be right now so that they can use the power of how they were successful in the right now to be proud of themselves, have moved their emotions a little bit, all of those things that move the needle in the next moment. That's kind of how this bridge is connected. There's several other things that happen as well. It's a broad, intricate process.
Gotcha. Does this have application for, let's say, people who are more neurotypical, not facing dementia? Just, is this a practice that can benefit just your everyday leader, that it can help bridge those gaps? Because I had that happen. That was part of, I would say, my practice, but it was part of program with one of my therapists, was doing that, is making that bilateral connection, is having stimulation on either side of the body and building that bridge. Yes. And between that and then actually like processing with someone who's skilled at navigating those sort of things, like it did a lot of good for me. It helped me gain some new skills and find more calm, be a little bit more present, even though I'm still going to struggle with that. That's just part of my work to do. How does this engage someone who maybe doesn't have something neurologically going on that we're trying to improve or slow down, like a dementia?
There's typically not really a practice that is so specific for a non-neurotypical individual. The difference is the practices of somebody who is neurodivergent is we look for specific practices and specific habits that are tailored towards their communication, specific needs, and we modify what those things look like. So we go from the difference between broad and then very specific.
I gotcha. So maybe somebody who is more neurotypical just needs something more broad they can engage with, and that can become integrated in whatever their practices are that help them develop. Whereas someone who's more neurodivergent might need something more specific as you figure out like what's meaningful for them, because neurodivergence is on a spectrum and what person over here needs is different than someone over there.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the daycare youth, I'm curious, and this may just be me selfishly asking because of my three-year-old. We adopted him, and both of his parents have intellectual disabilities. And so we're looking into like, how can we help him make progress? We don't know exactly how his parents' genetics have impacted him. He's doing things we were told he shouldn't be able to do, walk and talk. So praise God on that. But what's the age at which these sort of practices, engaging with music, behavior, cognitive therapy, when is the right time to introduce it? Because I can imagine maybe there is a leader and they're thinking about their kid and they're like, yeah, that we've been told that they might be on the spectrum or have some sort of disability. When's the right time to introduce this? When does it make a difference versus, or when do we need a professional like you versus, well, I'm going to go buy some Fisher Price hand drums. That's what Casey said to go get. And we're just going to beat on it. And that's going to solve it.
Yeah. Fun fact, I will never tell you to go buy Fisher Price hand drums to do bilateral anything at all.
All right. There we go. We have a non-endorsement. I don't know.
But there's just other things that make so much better sense. Yeah. So fun fact, -9 months old. Is the answer to the question. Mothers can do bilateral tapping if they know which ones are actually bilateral in the womb.
Okay. Kind of like people saying, you should play like Mozart or something for the kid. It'll make them smarter,
exactly,
better at algebra. I don't know.
It is. It's exactly that. So there is for neurodivergency, there is a space to where, like between the ages of 1 and 2, depending on maturation level of kid and growth and development of kid, the combination of both, not one alone, maturation level and growth and development of cognition of the kid, cognition meaning brain functioning. Okay. There's an age of birth to 2 years old to where sometimes a professional coming in and doing periodic or every now and then bilateral practices does not work without assistance of parents also doing similar practices in the gaps.
Like you come in, you demonstrate, kind of like you were saying at the beginning, where you let the parents engage with it and you give them feedback on how they can improve the facilitation.
Yeah.
We had the same thing with PT and OT for several of our foster kids. They would go through the whole, like the 1 hour session or appointment. And then they say, here's your like homework of like exercises you can work with them on. And then that's what my wife and I would work through. Oh, we picked this up or we're going to jump up on this now, the sort of thing.
Yeah. And so for me, it's more of you say these colors that are one syllable words. You hold this board up that are these specific colors. You do this a number of times, blah, blah, more of, but yes, similar things to like PT and OT. Like I give you homework, not a whole lot of homework. It's 10 minutes a day or 5 seconds a day, or just make sure you do when they wake up in the morning. Or make sure you do this before they go to bed at night. So specific times of the day are really important because it gets really specific.
Which is where you hear things like sundowning, like we're like those sort of things in different care centers I've heard of, just having some family members in the medical community like that that's got talked about. And I was like, oh, wow, that's really fascinating. I didn't realize times a day could be a triggering event for anything. Talk about if there's a neurodivergent leader out there, right? So they've matured, they're in the workforce, right? And obviously, again, spectrum, like it's wide. Like you may have some very severe symptoms, behaviors. They may be lightweight. They may be very outwardly expressive. They may be really inwardly expressive or experienced. What's your advice for a neurodivergent leader? And they usually got promoted because they're a top performer, and it may actually be their specific type or fixation or something like that does make them excellent at what they do. But now suddenly I'm responsible for people and leading performance, and yeah, I have key performance indicators. How can they incorporate some of these practices for themselves? It's one thing to be a child and we bring a specialist like you into the home and the parents are helping guide this, mm-hmm. but now you're more autonomous. Maybe it needs to look different. Like you said, maturation level. If someone's in their late 20s and they're getting that first managerial job, what can they do to improve how they show up and lead? And are there some of the practices you prescribe that they can incorporate, or are there others that you might suggest based on that circumstance?
There are definitely some of the practice that I would prescribe. They just may be a little bit more time specific or lengthier.
Okay.
Yeah, just maybe a little bit more dialed in. I also would suggest that person be, which this is not what you asked, but this is what was on my heart. But I would suggest that person be really open about their neurodivergent and their needs to whomever they're looking at, management, boss, whatever that looks like. Mm-hmm. I would also suggest that person have some type of mentor outside of that, so that if that person has any quirks that they are concerned about or nuances that they're concerned about or whatever it may be, so that person can guide them through how to handle it autonomously, like within mm-hmm. the workplace or the work function. Mm-hmm. So it would be really, really cool as well.
Yeah, I love that. I want to sort of like flip the roles now. Let's talk to the leader who maybe has someone who's maybe neurodivergent on their team, right? They've maybe never experienced it. They don't have the training you do or exposure to some of it like I have or something like that. Yeah. Like they're in unfamiliar territory. And the fact that older Gen Z and the very, very late millennials are dominating the workforce, and as medicine and diagnostics mm-hmm. and things like that have improved, you actually see like this swell of people with diagnosis, where previous generations, there probably were the same percentage of people. Yeah. They just went undiagnosed or were misdiagnosed yeah. in some cases. But now you have leaders who have no exposure or understanding of this, and they just see someone who's really peculiar or somebody who does things like, I don't want you to do it that way. Like, how can you give some advice to leaders that they become aware of this, or maybe they spot someone who is, they want to enter into that conversation. They, like you were saying at the beginning, they want to take the time, they endeavor to be a good leader. They want to take the time to understand, how does this person learn on my team? How do they receive communication effectively? How can I hear their voice when we're making a team decision? How can I bring out the best in them when I don't have the experience to engage with them the same way I would with someone who's more neurotypical?
Sure. So it's kind of mirroring what you said, right? I would suggest going through training. I would also suggest developing your listening skills and your skills to paying attention to cues. And mm-hmm. I think it's something you just grow in. You just have to allow yourself mm-hmm. to grow in it, but you have to allow yourself to do that. But going through training is going to be, would be really key with that, so that you can gain some understanding of what to look for, so that you can learn how that person learns, right? So mm-hmm. that you can learn mm-hmm. what that person gets bounded up or irritated by naturally, mm-hmm. right? So that you can avoid those mm-hmm. things or learn how to advocate for that person when those things come about, right? Those things mm-hmm. will be really important for that.
Are there trainings that are accessible and that put maybe the term, like the language in a way that's more accessible for people who don't study the mental health profession like you do? Are there any that you would point people to or organizations you think are doing a good job?
That would depend on where you live.
Okay.
I don't know of any right now. Unfortunately, there's not so many of those trainings around. I do know that.
But they're out there.
Yeah, they're out there for sure.
Yeah. Okay. The getting back to the being present.
Yeah.
It would seem that there's a care, a grace that you would be able to extend to people that maybe are more mm-hmm. different from you if you are being, if you're slowing the heartbeat, if you're, as Dallas Willard famously mm-hmm. said, I don't know if you've heard this quote, but one of his mentees asked him, like, what's the key to a successful life as a believer in Christ?
Yes.
But he thought he's going to throw down some scripture, do all this stuff. He said, it's the ruthless elimination of hurry.
Yes.
And that feels like the resounding message and what you're describing is that that's the sort of life to practice and move closer to. How has this impacted, let's say, you, as you're a very productive guy, right? So I don't assume that what you're prescribing and saying and advocating for is something that you just 5-year-old Casey Mews going to kindergarten like, I'm centered. You weren't just born with this, but you've come into it. And I usually find that people who come into this, it's usually been because they were so geared the other way. They had to develop this as a practice and a discipline for their life. And I could be way off base here, and please correct me if I'm wrong. But how has this practice impacted you?
Sure. So for me, it has come into my life specifically off of a season of experiencing mental health crisis, right? So going through depression, going through anxiety, going through grief because I'd lost a few key people in my life, specific eras in my life, and wanting to be, I had the desire to not be impacted by it because I wanted to be successful and it was crippling me, right? Yeah. And always having drumming and always recognizing and knowing the power of drumming and allowing mm-hmm. myself to gain education on the impact of drumming in my life, and then recognizing how I could give education and give wisdom and knowledge of and possible discernment about how it could be given to others. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I slowly transitioned into. Wasn't a quick thing, couldn't be a quick thing at all. And I realize as time goes on, even now, like I'm speaking about it, but I get better with it as time goes on. And I think sometimes the betterment happens with me verbalizing needs of myself with specific people that are close to me, right? Like whether it be my wife, whether it be my father-in-law, whether it be my mom, right? So setting boundaries through verbalizing my own needs has been really important with that as well.
Gotcha. And has slowing down and tuning in to your rhythm, has that allowed you to more clearly discern what your needs are? Because so often you may say, I'm here to help. What do you need? And it feels like more than half the time people are like, I don't even know.
Right.
Has that slowing down allowed you to more clearly see what your needs actually are?
Yes. Also, if you don't know, you can say, I don't really know yet. Because if a person asks you what you need and you are sitting there and there's tension or there's not tension or whatever it may be, a lot of times the most freeing thing can be for that person that asked you, that cared enough to ask you what you need, is simply for you to say, I don't really know in this moment.
Right. Or just honest answer. And that's really all you could hope for when you ask that question.
Yeah, that's the goal is to. And so speaking of using the word honesty, right? I'm a really huge proponent of practicing and understanding the word transparency instead of honesty. Honesty says, yes, I did that thing. But transparency said, yes, I did that thing. And what happened when I did that thing is they ran out of it. And I had to go to this other place to get the thing. And so that's why it took me two more hours to get the thing done. And so I'm late because I had all these hurdles and obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
It gives collateral information as to what happened, not it was done or it was not done. So because you're giving collateral information, you're giving the matters of your heart and the matter of factness of what happened.
Mm-hmm. I really like that. So Casey, if somebody is listening and they say, you know what, this resonates. I'd love to live my life like this. I'd love to lead from this place. What's a baby step someone could take in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money, to start to be more in the present moment?
Okay. Couple of things. No money at all. Wake up in the morning and breathe deeply 5 times. Inhale, exhale, like deeply. Just deeply. Little money, after you do that, go to the Dollar General or your nearest dollar store and get a journal and invest in a good pen. Decent pen. Just the pen that you like, not a pen that people say is a good pen, but a pen that you like that's comfortable for you to write. And write down 2 things that you want to accomplish today. And then go do those 2 things. And then do that tomorrow. 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 Oh, and then do that tomorrow.
But do I do it tomorrow?
You do. And then you do it tomorrow again.
Ah.
But then specifically, if you really want to make it impactful, do it right when you wake up every morning.
Okay. Breathe. I was going to say get busy, but get productive.
Yes. But you don't have to write a lot. If you want to do that,
just be simple.
Yeah. If you want to be a author at some point in time, cool. Those things can come later. The important thing is that you wrote down some things and that you got some things done based upon what you wrote down.
And that is always a good feeling. I love that. I actually had a previous guest who sent me, he wanted a pocket-sized journal. He just wanted something simple that would help him develop the practice easily. He's like, some of these too complex, they're too large. He goes, I just want something I can throw in my back pocket.
Yeah.
I can just jot it down and it has a spot for he did a top three, but what's top three? What am I grateful for today? Mm-hmm. How can I see myself more clearly? Just a few of those things. So sometimes some journals, if you want to spend a little more money, sometimes there's ones with prompts. I know sometimes that helps me to have something to respond to.
Sure.
But just listing a couple of things, I've gone through seasons where I was really disciplined about listing those out and it felt really good to cross them off end of the day. Man, I got that done. I feel more positive and that positivity flowed into others.
Yes. There's also YouTube has some really good prompts as well. They can guide you through some prompt videos. So I really like some of those. So sometimes they require a little bit more cognitive energy. So sometimes I will say this, right? So what I've found with a lot of my counseling clients is they just need something to write down. They don't want to have to think about it. They don't want it to be so complicated. Right. They just want to use it as a tool to get in the practice of writing, which is valid. It's so very valid, right? So sometimes a lot of those YouTube prompts require a little bit more cognition. If you want something simple that you can do, you can do something like that. You can just write down 3 grateful things, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do a practice like that with my kids on the way to school. I heard it was the guy, I think it was the guy who wrote the 10% Happier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he even has his own app now. But they do three thankful things every day on the way to school.
Yeah.
And they have to mix it up because they would say the same thing every day. I was like, mix it up. You got more going on in your life.
Yes.
They're like,
yes.
I don't know. And I'm like, did you have to walk to school or did I drive you? I was like, did you wake up in a bed?
Yeah.
Did you have clothes?
Yes.
And they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I had a friend one time who he would do that with his kids. And so he would say, give me three grateful things that happened in math class today. Give me three grateful things of what happened in science class today. Give me three grateful things that happened at lunch today. And he would do that.
Wow.
He would split that up because he got, you notice the same thing, right? Yeah. Or you can say, give me three grateful things that have nothing to do with anybody but you. Because sometimes when you do, or you would do the highs and lows, right? And so when you do the highs and lows, he would get some of the lows are responses to other people that he would get. In reality, you want all of those things to only be about self unless it's a specific exercise that does not take that roll on, right? And so he would say, give me all of your highs and lows that have nothing to do with anybody else but you.
Wow. I like that one. One I still experiment with is, again, I think I heard it on a podcast, but was asking the question, who did you help today?
Mm.
So the flip, like we want to be others focused and serve. And I'm sure you've come across this in your mental health studies, but the impact of helping another human being has such a positive impact on your own life to bring you out of maybe a dark or troubling place.
Yes.
Lots of great ideas that you can go through. So whoever you are listening, take your pick, whatever is a good place to start, just so that you start. That's what's important.
And that you
do it tomorrow. Yeah. Casey, if people want to know more about you, Avenue Speak, your work, your book, like things like that, where would you send them?
Yeah. I'd send you to my website, which is caseymuse.com, and it's got all the things on there. All the drumming programs are in a specific place. All of my mentorship program is in a specific place. And if you want to just simply ask me a question about or schedule a consultation, I'm here for it. And so all you got to do is call me. My number is on there or email me. My email address is on there. And yeah, we'll get you going.
Excellent. Yeah. And that is Casey, C-A-S-E-Y, Muse, M-U-Z-E.com, in case you're driving along and you wanted to memorize that. But we'll have the link in the show notes.
Sure and put the Z in Muse instead of the S.
Yeah. Z, which makes it cooler, right? We'll also have your LinkedIn, and then we have a link to your book on Amazon as well. So if y'all want to go and pick that up, there will be a link to the Amazon listing there. Casey, thank you so much for spending some time with me. This was really informative and confirming and affirming for some things for me, and I'm sure for the listeners. Speaking of which, listeners, grateful for you that you would spend any part of your day with me and Casey. We like to have fun. We hope you had fun with us and that you learned something along the way. Do me a favor, if you would, like, rate, review, subscribe, whatever the right button is on your platform of choice. That engagement helps more people find it in discovery, algorithms, all that fun stuff. And also, it's just a free and easy way for you to help your fellow leaders along their journey, because you never know what conversation may unlock their next step. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.